There's one thing that will forever change the way you sleep, and it's the softest, 100% organic cotton bedding from Boll & Branch. You'll fall asleep faster, wrapped in the most luxurious comfort. You'll never sleep hot again with airy blankets, cloud-like duvets, and breathable sheets. You'll experience pure comfort on night one and feel your bedding get softer with every wash. Discover the difference with 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com with code ODYSSEY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season two on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season one and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season two.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Gearing up for the big game? We are too. Join us on the Moth Podcast for a special episode dedicated to hilarious true stories about football, family, and growing up.
I loved Franco Harris so much that in 1975, I invited him to my bar mitzvah. And he was so cool that he actually sent me a telegram.
Each week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, and above all, true. Find the Moth Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Wow. Noel, do you have ESPN on right now?
No, what happened?
Somebody just hit the half-court shot before Duke and UNC.
Wow.
And they just won $19,000.
Wow, that's some good money as a college student.
Wow. That's incredible. Congratulations to Raphael Lee.
Yeah,
that was
insane. He's an in-state student.
Yeah, and he had all his friends out there on the court with him. They all bumped that. Wow, that's incredible.
Wow.
Could you imagine? I can't imagine what $9 looks like at this point in my life. Could you imagine $19,000? Speaking of which, continuing to get Chris Thomas, by the way, with you, final hour. Caleb Johnson coming up next. You guys are killing me on the text line, by the way. Noel, I'm getting so many good responses. It's so funny. Again, my relationship dilemma summed up earlier in the show. I presented it. I got Valentine's Day coming up with the girlfriend, and then our six-month relationship anniversary is the following week. And she loves to give gifts and receive gifts, and she loves holidays, and she loves to do it up big. But she said, oh, babe, let's do Valentine's Day, you know, modest or big, and then we'll do the relationship anniversary modestly. I'm like, I don't know if I believe all that, because, again, she loves to do it big, but she's insisting that, no, we could, you know, we had Valentine's Day, and we had my birthday, your birthday, Christmas, so, you know, we don't need to go 100 miles deep on that one. And I'm like, okay, we'll see. So I put out the clarion call. I said, Falcons, Hawks, Braves, Georgia Nation, Atlanta, help. What do I do? And I'm getting so many good responses. Turtle, take it. Trust your gut. This will go down on your permanent record, he says, Noel. It will be chronicled and logged. Go with your gut. Do it big. That's sort of where I'm leaning, man. Someone else says, yeah, she'll play modest, but she loves extravagance. Take her to a play and buy her some art. No, that's not what I mean, silly. That's not what I mean, people. Somebody else said last segment, they said, put your foot down. I'm like, yeah, okay. Because that's how that works. Yeah, please, sir, go tell your wife that you're going to go put your foot down and see how many nights on the couch that lands you. Come on. So if you have a thought, 404-726-0929, getting a lot of great responses on the text line, on my Twitter as well, at C Thomas Radio. He said something, and I teased this before the break. He said something in his presser that actually made me feel a lot better. And I wasn't expecting it, and I'm really glad I heard it. When Jeff Olbrich spoke, he went out of his way to talk about something. And that something, Noel, was the biggest concern I had with Jeff Olbrich taking over as the DC. I thought that he and Raheem's relationship was too buddy-buddy, was too close to really get in there, into the nitty-gritty, and diagnose what the hell went wrong with this defense.
I thought he was reading tweets because he came in here and just knocked that question out the park. Like, mm-hmm. Look, everybody.
Right. Exactly. So that was my biggest concern, was that if you brought in – the guy I wanted to know was Steve Wilks. And he went to the Jets, and I think that's going to be the Falcons' loss there, potentially. Although I think Jeff Ulbrich could be fine. But the issue was you're too close to it. You've been here before. You know Raheem. You're one of his best friends. Can you be the guy that comes in there and says, look, X, Y, and Z went wrong, and this is what we need to do to fix it? Especially if, let's say, Y in this equation in X, Y, and Z was something that Raheem Morris did. Can you look him in the face and say, hey, bud, you done screwed this one up, and this is what we need to do to fix it? That was my biggest concern. But he went head on and addressed this situation and said the following.
It's funny because Raheem and I have a very close relationship, but I love the fact that we turned this interview into a very official interview where it wasn't just Ra and myself just chopping it up like buddies. Like, it was, I thought they were very thorough, asked amazing questions, and it was a great opportunity for myself to really get to know and for them to get to know me, everybody else in the organization that I didn't have previous experience with. So it was an amazing interview process, and ultimately they chose myself, which, again, so grateful, so excited.
Love it. Loved hearing that. Because to me, that means he's going to be given a green light and be able to made to feel comfortable to do what they're doing now, which is reviewing last year's defense and say, hey, yo, this sucked. Guys, you let up 800 million points to the Vikings, Broncos, Commanders, and Panthers. Can't have that happen again. And more importantly, here's how we fix it. That was my concern. That, you know, can you honestly look, you know, your best friend comes out and he's wearing a new shirt that he loves, but it doesn't really look right on him. Can you really tell him, hey, bud, I know you just spent $100 on that shirt. I think you gotta put it back. It's tough because you love the person and you want to see him succeed and do well. When you do that as a coach, that's what leads to continuing problems. And Ulbrich went on to say, more importantly, that when he was the head coach of the Jets, he felt like he wasn't getting all the necessary information because the people around him, the people in his camp, didn't want to do just that. They didn't want to look him in the face and say, coach, this isn't working. And he said that he will never let that get in the way of him being a good coach. And I thought that was brilliant. Brilliant. And you guys know, I'm quick to judge and I'm quick to point out the negatives. This is a gigantic positive in the coaching corner of Jeff Ulbrich. I thought he sounded mature. I thought he sounded wise. I thought he sounded weathered in a good way, meaning he's been through a lot of stuff but came out the other side. I thought he sounded like a guy that really has learned a lot since he left Atlanta. But the biggest thing is that piece. Is that piece right there that we just heard. That he's going to be able to look Raheem Morris in the face and say, look, I love you, man, but we got to fix a lot of stuff. And that's what they're doing right now. He said they're going to have a two-week, they called it a digestion period, where they're going to open up the tape, they're going to look at the numbers, and they're going to decide what went wrong. And then they're going to decide what to implement from his time in New York and hopefully come up with something special. A couple of other things that he said that I thought were really interesting. The difference from coming over from Seattle. This is really important because it really shows how times have changed in the NFL.
When we came around here the first time, you know, we were implementing the old Seattle system, you know, and the Seattle system had some amazing strengths to it, and it did some things that were, at the time, fairly revolutionary in some ways. And I loved it and believed in it. You know, it's just the game has changed. It really has. Like, these offensive coordinators are absolute pains in my butt because it's not like the old day of, all right, you play cover three, here's the three beaters. You play cover four, here's the quarters beaters. It's not that way anymore. They They watch your tape, they learn your rules, and then they beat you ways that you've never been beat before. So because of that, you need more variety in coverage. You need more multiplicity in the front. You need more scheme, you know? And so that's where I've changed completely. Really, you know, I want to provide the players with the best opportunity to be successful on game day. Well, sometimes just playing the same coverage over and over again, you're not doing that. You're actually putting their chin out there and letting people take haymakers, you know? So from that way, I've grown a lot.
Love it. Again, I came away very impressed with Jeff Ulbrich. I was not expecting to be as impressed as I was. And I really think my initial trepidation about the hire, I'm giving myself an addendum here, a little bit of a mulligan to say, hey, you know what? Maybe I was wrong, and maybe I should come into this with a little bit more of an open mind, because he sounds like a guy that has really taken accountability and has really learned from the mistakes of his past and wants to grow from them and implement them into his new system here in Atlanta. And if you do that, combined with not letting his personal relationship get in the way of being able to have open and honest dialogue with Raheem Morris before and during the season, sounds like a winning formula to me. Sounds like everything's right to me. Sounds like he won't be able to do, or he will be able to do, anything that a Steve Wilkes or a Wink Martindale would have been able to do here. So I'm going to let this one play itself out instead of sort of having my arms crossed and one eye shut, sort of looking at this thing from afar. Those two pieces are really important. One more before we get out of here. Again, just further adding to this narrative about how good this hire feels. He was talking about how Atlanta feels like home.
To get started, I'd like to really thank Arthur Blank, to start with, to be a part of an organization with such an amazing owner. What he's done, not just for this organization, this fan base, but what he does in the community of Atlanta. Just honored to be a part of it again. And then to be with a head coach, which I love and really believe is the best in football. To be back with him, it's just, it's beyond exciting. And can't wait to get started with these guys. Can't wait to get started with this entire defensive staff. These players, it's just, it's coming home for me.
Love it. Sometimes it feels good to be wrong, man. I was convinced. I really was. When they first announced this hire, I was like, oh, really? Like, this is the most obvious, the safest, the most, like, cliche move that this team could have made. But after hearing from him and everything he had to say, he really hit all the right notes. Especially that first piece that we talked about. Because I really do believe, if you polled the 100 Falcons fans, that would have been the biggest issue. The comfort, the inability to really read the room and tell Raheem and his staff what's going on, because, you know, again, you don't want to look your friend in the face and give him the bad news. Especially in a setting like the NFL, where life comes at you fast, man. But that really doesn't sound like it's going to be the case. And if he's willing to use that relationship as a strength instead of a potential weakness, then that could be something special. Again, we got to let it play out. We got to see what happens on the field. But because he's going into it with the mindset that he is, I think it was the right move. And again, I did not think I'd be sitting here saying that just a couple of weeks ago. All right, 404-726-0929. We got a couple of segments left, and I am very, very, very interested to hear what Noel White has cooked up for a producer six-pack. You guys know by now, been doing it for years. Four sports questions of any kind, and then two lifestyle questions. Could be anything. Could be about food, movies, music, whatever, you name it. Noel has carte blanche to ask me whatever she wants, and I'm excited. Because I think we've only done it maybe once or twice together. Because, again, usually my man Eric Slaughter's hanging out with me on the weekends here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. But Noel's filling in for him today. So I handed her the reins. I said, Noel, Fire away. Ask me whatever you want. She's going to do that next. Chris Thomas taking you up until the top of the hour right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. And take us with you anytime, anywhere on the free Odyssey app.
Time for the producer's six-pack on the other side of the glass.
Six questions.
Six questions.
Six chances to produce greatness.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Oh, that's right. It is time for the producer six-pack on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Chris Thomas with you until the top of the hour. Our buddy Caleb Johnson will come your way then, taking you up until Hawks pregame. Yeah, I don't think they win tonight either, unfortunately. I mean, can they? Yeah. The Pacers are okay. What are they, like the fifth seed or something like that in the East? I mean, they're okay. Right now, they're just better. I mean, there's not a lot of teams that aren't better than the Hawks right now, and I don't know. I mean, let's just hope. That's all. Well, right, that's what we have right now. We have hope that the season will turn itself around. I don't know if we have anything tangible that says that right now, but we sure have some hope that, you know, if Risa Shea can keep pouring in 30-point games and Hunter scores 20 or 25 off the bench, you know,
Bueller. Just what makes that little old ant think he can move that rubber tree plant? Yeah, high hopes.
Yeah, exactly. I just thought this season was going to be different, man. And I feel like I'm talking about the Falcons and I'm talking about Jordan. Like, I just wanted it to be different, man. I sound like Sharon Moore after the game. We did it for you, Harbaugh, man. That's how I feel like right now. Just, I was so confident. Because you know why, Noel? Because I really thought for the first time, Landry Fields nailed it.
Right. I was like, it's built right.
Like,
oh, my goodness.
He nailed it.
It's built right.
I was like, this thing is gonna work finally. I thought Risa Shea was the right pick. I thought once we saw what Dyson Daniels can do, I was like, damn, he did it. After all the crap we gave him, he did it, man. Finally, we were giving him his flowers on Dukes and Bell. But it's not his. Is it his fault? I mean, you can't predict that Jalen Johnson is going to be injury prone, right?
You can't control injuries. That's the tough part. You can build it as best as humanly possible, but if you can't keep all the pieces on the floor at the same time, then you just can't. And it's so frustrating because we saw a glimpse of what it can be, and then it was like it was just snatched.
Yeah, there was like the first 15, 20 games of the season? It was like,
we're only like 2.5 games out from fourth place.
Right.
And then
you blink and now it's seven. You lost seven games in a row. It's unbelievable. Weird side note before we get to a six pack. I have ESPN on one TV, the college basketball on the other TV. And they're doing this thing called Generations where different generations of players interview each other and talk about their careers. It's actually pretty cool. And Terrell Suggs is interviewing Max Crosby.
Hmm.
Terrell Suggs must have lost 100 pounds.
It's so weird
it's
to see linemen.
It's unbelievable.
It's so weird to see linemen when they retire. I remember the first time I saw Joe Thomas from the Browns when he retired, and I was like, who is that?
It's
lost a whole other person.
Like, he looks, like, skinny. Like,
yeah.
not even, like, jacked. Like, just, like, he looks skinny. It's unbelievable what these guys, how much they work their bodies to get to the point where, you know, they're playing defensive end and linebacker and going up against 330-pound offensive linemen. Like, I was like, is that Terrell Suggs? Because you look at him next to Max Crosby. Max Crosby's in playing shape right now. So
right.
He's humongous. And Terrell Suggs looks like, you know, a regular person next to him. It's really unbelievable. All right. Anyway, with that said, but if you're checking this thing out on ESPN, do yourself a favor. It's pretty unbelievable. All right. Let's get to a six pack. Noel, what do you got for me?
All right. There we go. How exciting is the return of Miggy to Atlanta United?
I think it's tremendous. Not only just on the field or the pitch, but off of it as well. We saw what happened at the airport. We talked about that with Joe Patrick. For a club that – we talk about a club that needs a spark. I mean, we were talking about the Hawks. How about Atlanta United with the past couple of seasons that they've had? I don't. Again, everyone keeps saying that follows it a lot closer than I do, that he may not be exactly the same player that he once was, but he can definitely still help you on the pitch and be a productive player. But I think even more than that, it shows you just by the fan sentiment of how important this move really is. And for a team that, you know, needs a restructuring of culture and identity and, you know, welcoming in another new manager, I think it's the perfect fit for what this club needs right now. So I'm excited to see not only what he can do on the pitch, but how he continues to inspire the fans off of it.
Who is your 2024 Super Bowl winner?
I think I'm going to have to go with the Chiefs. You gotta beat them. Like, until somebody proves to me that they can beat him, right? You got to freaking beat him.
Yeah, it's the Ric Flair situation. Yeah. Got to beat the man to beat a man.
Exactly. And the Eagles have the formula to do it. If somebody's going to do it, they can do it because they can get to the quarterback and they can run the ball. So if you could do those two things, that's the formula to beat the Chiefs is you got to keep them off the field on offense and you got to beat them up when they are. So if, you know, and supposedly they might get Brandon Graham back, which is huge for them. He's a defensive captain. They got those Georgia boys, man. Nolan Smith is coming along nicely. Jalen Carter's a beast now. Jordan Davis. So if they, and the Chiefs offensive line is not, I mean, they're not great. They're on their third starting left tackle. So if you can, you know, get Mahomes, but the thing is, like, even when teams do that, he just does that stupid little bootleg move out to the right.
It's so annoying.
He does it every time, he finds Kelce for 14 yards down the field.
Or he just gets the first down himself.
Or he runs it, right. And then he slides and, you know, they get an extra 15 yards because
chaos ensues.
Right. And he's been doing that for 10 years. The same damn thing. He's been doing it for a decade now. And that's the problem.
No look throws, and it's a whole lot of stuff that should not still be working, but it does, and I hate it.
Right. But with as good as Saquon Barkley's been this year, if they can chew up clock and not let him on the – see, but that's the problem, though, with Saquon. He's a home run hitter.
Mm-hmm.
You need, like, long, sustained 8-9-minute drives that don't put the Chiefs on the field. But if Saquon hits you for 65 on the second play.
Oh, like the NFC Championship?
Yeah, game? Like you'll take the score, obviously. But do you want that as opposed to an 8-minute drive?
Yeah.
That's my only the problem. But I will say, I think I'm going to have to take the Chiefs again. To get it done.
Okay, what should be the Falcons' focus in the draft?
Defense. And some more defense.
Yeah. And since they need something on every level, is there a preference or best player available?
Pass rush. Number 15, you go pass rush. I don't care who it is. Give me the best guy on the board. They need another corner.
Yeah.
They need another safety.
Yeah,
They need another linebacker.
Yeah, you need something on every level.
You need all those things. So if you're going to – and it sucks too because we talked about this with Joe. They really don't have the money to do anything.
Yep.
Like a lot of the supplementing that you'd want to have happen can't really be done in free agency. I mean, it will. They'll find a way to make some money. They always do. The Saints do it every year. There are teams that do it every year. They're not going to be able to do nothing, but it's not like they're not going to be able to bring in, like, you know, the, you know, I don't know, Yannick Ngakoue or, you know, high level pass rusher that's been available, Jonathan Grenard, like all these guys that have, Danielle Hunter, all those guys that have signed over the last couple of years. Like, they're not going to be able to sniff those type of guys. So you need to be able to, I think, corner and edge rush are the two most important. That's where I devote most of my resources. Because J.D. Bertrand looked, he looked pretty good. Like, maybe he's not ready to start next year, but could he play a significant role as a rotational guy? I think he could. You're going to bring back Landman? Is Troy Andersen finally going to stay healthy? Like, he's really good when he's healthy.
Yeah, I think all the linebackers are actually, like, pretty serviceable to good. I just don't know if they ever match together or if it was scheme or if it was injuries. I don't know. But I spent a lot of games going, do we have linebackers?
Right.
It was like, either they made plays or they did.
It was Caden Ellis and who?
Yeah.
That's part of the problem.
It was a revolving door outside of that.
And then
he was a better edge rusher, so.
And then Noel, who the heck's playing safety opposite Jesse Bates?
Exactly. Who's playing corner opposite?
I don't know. I think Mike Hughes was.
He was okay.
Okay.
Right. He was cool.
He was all right. He was a good tackler for sure. Is he worth bringing back? I don't know. But yeah, I'm gonna go corner and edge rush.
All right. The NL East has become a money race. Is that a problem for the Braves? Or how much of a problem is that for the Braves?
A big one. Big one. Because here's the problem, Noel. They're still like top six in payroll in baseball right now. I don't think they're doing anything. I think the team you have right now is essentially the team you're going to have going into spring training. Maybe they bring in a back end of the rotation starter guy, but AA came on Dukes and Bell a couple of weeks ago and said, Grant Holmes and Ian Anderson are fighting for the fifth spot. I don't like that. That's not good enough to me. So it's going to be like, I hate to say it this way, but David Sampson said it to us earlier. Can you really count on Chris Sale to do that again next year?
Yep.
I hope so. I want to believe it, but that's a huge. Even if you're asking him to be 65% of that, he was unbelievable.
Yeah, man.
Like that, it was like the best season of his career, and yeah. He's like 35 years old. I mean, I don't know. Do you? I mean, does anybody?
You made it sound like angels in the outfield when they sent Tony Danza out there with no shoulder.
I mean, isn't that kind of what it felt like?
And he had all the angels around him just pushing him through the season.
He wins basically 20 games. He's got like a 2 ERA. I mean, who the hell had that on their bingo card? And then what's Strider going to be like whenever he gets back? I don't know. It's his second major arm surgery. And he's like 26 years old. So, yeah, unfortunately, Noel, it's going to be a problem.
All right, and this is going to sound like a sports question, but it's really a lifestyle question. Are you interested at all in watching the Pro Bowl?
No, I won't watch a single second of it. whatever highlights pop up on my Twitter feed tonight is what I will see, and that will be that. I couldn't be less interested in the Pro Bowl. And here's the thing, Noel. I wasn't interested in the Pro Bowl when it was the Pro Bowl.
Yeah.
So never mind that it's now. Like, I think we're going to like an arcade or something tonight. I'm not watching the. It'll be on like when we're at the bowling lanes. It'll like be on the screen. I'm sure, but I don't give a. You know what? I mean, did Bijan do anything cool this weekend? That's basically all I'm looking for. I saw a picture of him and Jesse. That's nice. Good for them. But no.
I saw Cordero Haas cheesing. That's great for him. I love that he's there. But to your point, yeah.
Good for him. To see these guys play dodgeball against each other, I'm good.
All right, last question. In the past 6 months, what new interest or hobby or fun thing have you picked up now as a part of a couple?
Oh, that's a good one. Definitely trying new restaurants. She has opened up my palate and ability to try new things a lot.
Oh, she done got you out of chicken fingers and fries.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Like I tried pho for the first time. We're doing a Korean barbecue in a couple of weeks. Yeah, so I'm trying a lot of new things because she's a foodie.
And, nice.
I love food. I'm just, I like mac and cheese and chicken finger. My mantra is this. It's funny. I live by this motto. A, B, F. Anything but fish.
Okay.
I don't like fish. So as long as it's not fish, I will try it and I will eat it.
Fair.
So we're doing that. All right, Noel, great job on the six pack. Great job on the five Hawks true and false questions this afternoon. We're going to come back and wrap this puppy up. What should the Hawks do? Should they stay pat and just kind of say this is what it is? Or should they try to salvage the season? We'll talk about it to wrap up the show on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Last chance for romance here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Chris Thomas, Turtle with you till the top of the hour. Our buddy Caleb Johnson will come your way then, taking you up until Hawks pregame at 4:30 as they look to snap their 7-game losing streak against the Indiana Pacers. Start where we, or finish where we started here a little bit, and then I'll let you hear some more from the NFL this week that we didn't get to earlier in the show. And while we have a little bit of time before I get out of here, I want to let you hear from the likes of Jerry Jones, Liam Cohen, Duval. If that wasn't the most awkward thing you've ever heard in your entire life, we'll react to that in a little bit more right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. But the Atlanta Hawks, what should they do? Should they patchwork this thing? Should they try to put a giant Band-Aid on it and say, hey, we're going to ride this thing out and we're going to try to make a run here because we still got half a season? Or should they say, hey, we are where we are right now. What happens, happened. Let's regroup and let's work towards a brighter future. Meaning, let's give Reese Hoshea all the minutes in the world, Mo Gay, maybe call back up a Keaton Wallace, guys that are just able to help give a better vision of what the future of this team should look like. And for me, it's not an easy decision. It's a really hard one because you're essentially saying without a first-round pick, without a clear direction now, just for the rest of this season, without Jalen Johnson, what are we doing? What are we? What are we giving the fan base? What are we giving our coaching staff in terms of tape to build off of? What are we? So you can say, yeah, let's make a move. Let's get Brandon Ingram. Let's get Nurkic. Let's get somebody in here that we can come and give basically a blank slate now to Trey and say, hey, we got to pivot, but take this guy and get what you can out of him. You know, a guy like Ingram who can score 20 to 25 points a night. You know, maybe that opens the offense back up. Certainly won't help your defense, but what does that matter at this point anyway, right? I mean, the Hawks aren't playing defense. So I think there's a possibility to make the argument to do that, to add somebody, to bring somebody in, to have somebody say, hey, you know what? We still got half a season. We still need to try to give something. Just give something that makes the situation more palatable for the immediate future. Or you say, no, we're not going to do that. The ultimate result is not going to be achieved. We want to be a top six seed. We want to make a run back to the Eastern Conference Finals or make the NBA Finals. And we're not going to do that even if we add a player. Even if we bring in somebody that could help try to fill the void of a Jalen Johnson. So why are we doing an exercise just for the sake of doing the exercise? And that's sort of where I fall. Not sort of. That is where I fall. Because, like, do we want to put ourselves in a position where you're taking a step forward to take two back? Because that's just sort of what it feels like, right? Is Trae Young, with another year under his belt, you know, is that what he needs right now? Or does he need faith in the future? And I think it's the latter. Because faith in right now is what? Again, 7-8 seed again for the fourth year in a row. Fourth year in a row where it's just nothing. And that's what you're looking at. So I don't think you're pulling the wool over anybody's eyes. But again, it's just tough to then look at your fan base and say, well, this is kind of what we are. We're the Wizards or the Hornets or, you know, one of those teams where we're just middling and struggling and every night is just showing up to the ballpark to play a game. That's it. That's all she wrote. That's a really, really tough thing to do, especially with the expectations that you had for the season at the beginning, right? You were expected to be a true contender this year. Not for a title, but for a top six seed. Why not? And the team showed some real promise. Well, as I'm talking it out, is that fair? Were they really expected to contend for a top six? I mean, they were going to be in there. They were not going to be, again, they weren't going to be the Wizards. They weren't going to be the Hornets. That's for damn sure. So that we can say with certainty. You can argue and nitpick about where you think they were going to finish. Their over-under win total for the year was 35. I mean, Noel, that goes to show you everything you need to know. 35 wins. I mean, that's not what you want. But, you know, again, it wasn't the Wizards and it wasn't, you know, those types of teams in the NBA. So at the end of the day, it really just comes down to what you value more, right? Do you value every game for the rest of the season potentially meaning something by adding a player and saying, we're not giving up on this thing yet. We may have lost seven in a row, but, you know, we still have a bunch of games left this season where we're going to fight. Or are you going to say, hey, you know, we got to be realistic. We got to keep an eye on the future. We got to save as many assets as we can and say, you know, I'm not saying we're not going to try because, of course, we're going to try. But with the manpower of what we're able to roll out on the floor, it's just not going to be competitive with the better teams in the East, as you saw against the Cavs where they got crushed the other night. And as tough as that pill is to swallow, it's all in the effort of a brighter tomorrow. It's all in the effort of you get back Jalen Johnson next year. Risa Shea goes into year two. You have Trey with another year coming off maybe his best year. You have your six-man secret weapon now in DeAndre Hunter. And you see what you do in the offseason. And I think with all of that is a potential formula for some really good success, which it was supposed to be this year. But it's not now. We know that. And there's no, again, there's no, Hawks fans are smart. There's no pulling the wool over anybody's eyes. And nobody's trying to do that. I don't think the Hawks are trying to do that. I don't think Quinn Snyder's trying to do that. Nobody is. We all, Steve, Noel, did you hear Steve Koonin on Dukes of Bell yesterday? Did you happen to catch that spot?
I miss Puffy K. What did Puffy K say?
It wasn't what he said.
It was how he said it.
How he said it. He was a perfect representation of how we're all feeling right now. Just
disappointed.
Just disappointed. And he conveyed it so well, as he always does. One of the more articulate speakers I've ever come across. And I think he just spoke for everybody. He spoke for the fans, the media, the Hawks, the organization. And it really just illuminated just the gravity of the situation. Like, you just can't lose your second best player for the season.
You just can't.
You can't. Like, you can't. The team just doesn't function the same way without him. And on top of that, when you're trading, you know, two of your biggest depth pieces potentially in Bogey and Clint, your roster is just sort of left with what it is. And it's unfortunate. But at the same time, you can't sugarcoat it. You can't ignore it. You can't the phrase put lipstick on a pig about it. You gotta face facts and face reality. And the reality is that the 2024-2025 season is going to go not as planned. There really isn't a way. If the losing streak was at two right now or three, there's a much stronger case to be made for going all in, trying to make a splashy move, and put yourself back in a position to succeed. But seven games?
Yeah, what does Blooper say? Four is a streak? Well, seven's a skid, boys.
Yeah, seven is careening down the mountainside, unfortunately, at a very
landslide.
Yeah, high rate of speed. It's amazing there's still only four games under 500. It just shows you that they were in a good spot before this.
They really, really were.
They like, were.
And that's what happened. Like, we saw a real reality. It was almost like seeing water in the desert. It was like, oh my God, is it real? Is it there? And it was like, yeah, it is real. And it's like, and now it's gone. It's like the South Park meme. And it's gone.
Yeah, just like that. It's crazy how much can change in a little period of time. I mean, you're going up against Indiana tonight. It's at their place. Hawks are an 8.5 point dog.
And I think it's even like worse to watch this after watching essentially the Falcons do the exact same thing.
Yeah, start off positive direction, positive momentum. You feel like you're onto something, and then all of a sudden, there's a chance they lose another four games in a row.
Yeah.
Before you hit Washington, Orlando.
What does Washington even mean?
No, nothing.
At this point, we're like the only team that can't beat Washington.
Tickets are $8. If you want to watch.
I mean, that's a win.
If you want to watch that game and take a trip to D.C., you can get in the building for $8. Maybe that's a positive there. Yeah, because you have Indiana today. You have Detroit. You have your last remaining national TV game on ESPN against Wemby at home. And then you take on Giannis at home on next Friday.
Like, that's the thing. They played so well. They played themselves into a primetime game they weren't even supposed to have. And then.
Yeah, and then it's Washington, Orlando, New York, Orlando,
ooh,
Detroit.
Orlando, New York, and then Orlando again? Ugh.
There's a chance we're looking at like a 1-10 streak here, something like that. I mean, they could win this game this afternoon. I mean, again, Indiana's
right
not.
Where the Pelicans are. This is horrible. Ugh.
Yeah.
Well.
I mean, Indiana's 26-20.
They're definitely not as good as they were last year. A lot of the luster has worn off of them. People trying to figure out where Halliburton went, but still, they're still sitting in a better shape. Well, that's because they haven't lost their second best player. I mean, Pascal Siakam's still there, so.
And Halliburton's not even playing like
not at all.
People were ready to anoint him as like one of the top two or three guards in the league. He's not there yet, but. All right, with all of that said, you know, we'll still root for the home team because that's what we do, but just a gut punch sort of a couple of weeks for the Atlanta Hawks, and we'll see what they do. February 6th will be here before we know it, and we'll see who's on the team, who's not, what they decide to do. Again, they are at a fork in the road. Do they add a piece, try to Band-Aid this thing and say, we're not giving up on this season, or do they say, hey, it is what it is. We're at where we're at, and we're going to ride this thing out. Great job today by Noel White producing the program. Caleb Johnson is up next. A big thanks to my guests as well, David Sampson, Joe Patrick, and Caleb, who you hear coming up right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Of course, I'll catch you Monday at 2 o'clock on Dukes and Bell. You've been listening to The Other Side of the Glass with Chris Thomas. Hit me up on Twitter at CThomasRadio, and we can interact about all things Atlanta sports. I'll talk to you next time on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.